Yeah, well, I guess it's a wild naivety in a sense. You know, McLuhan is definitely the child that points out the Emperor's got no clothes. I mean, but to actually see him actually as a really wildly childlike consciousness in that sense, and I guess maybe he sees that a little bit in Bucky Fuller, insofar as he sees that left wing Puritanism is probably one of the only sensibilities that he says is pretty much immune to the whole advertising carry on.
Yeah, good point.
And so
we should have said that. We should have kept taping what we've been saying.
Good thing I just pushed record again, so it's we're all good. This is a little an addendum to the session.
Oh, good! You got the last 5 minutes recorded?
Yeah.
Okay, well, So carry on. Is there a point there you want to say more than you got the left? See, Marshall could work with anybody.
Yeah, but I guess in terms of you saying where you are different in stressing how much further McLuhan went, and I guess by pushing McLuhan's detachment to a degree that other people don't approximate, I mean, that's something of the detachment that people find in New Bob, that kind of, so we're here, we're awake, we're here, what do we do now?
And anybody is, you know, Zion says about Bob, he'll talk to anybody. You know, so I'll engage with anybody on the level they want. And that's what Marshall represented. I think that's a very, you know, quote, Christian or Catholic gesture. He's not having any images rule what he's going to do, who he's going to interact with or what he's going to do. He's available on duty 24/7. Ready to be a friend to anybody, and a friend to not to manipulate them for any particular commercial goal, but just to enjoy the power of perception.
Yeah, I was reading something today on the succession of tropes where people are looking at for the supposedly metaphor, synecdoche, metonymy, and irony, and how people like Foucault have put them in in a series and related them to developmental stages. And they tend to put metaphor first as being related to the early motor phase, 0 to 2 years old, and it's wildly anarchic. And in a sense, McLuhan stays within that trope of metaphor in that, you know, he's always looking at one situation through the other. He's in that wild childlike state. Whereas, as you get older, you get locked down.
Yeah, the key is the child is multisensory. It's not just using a visual metaphor. It's all kinds of metaphors. It's the analogical mirrors, the metaphorical mirrors, the multiple sensory dynamics. That's the important part, and that is tactile. To get locked down is to get into one kind of metaphor, one kind of sensory bias.
Yeah. Or to have your the trope truncated, where it's a part for a whole or a whole for the part, not one total situation through the lens of another situation.
Right. So the word metaphor, you have to understand it the way we're talking about it. If you use it in the normal sense, it's an abstract symbol.
In a very expanded sense.
Yeah, so you expand it by putting synecdoche and what were the other, irony and what were the others, later stages?
I can't remember the exact stages. So it went metaphor, synecdoche, metonymy, irony.
Yeah, the battle between, it seemed in the 70s, was over the new use of metonymy. I think it's Croker once said that McLuhan makes everybody a metonymy.
Yeah, metonymy to his metaphor.
Yeah, and I think McLuhan's metonymy and irony and synecdoche, all of them. So metaphor.
Yeah, well, that's that split in him, because he's both like naive and childlike, yet he's got this very mature, like what did you call him once, the flexible elder type situation, where he can sit back and reflect on his own childlikeness.
Hey, that's conscious childhood. You remember, was it Oscar Wilde said, you know, youth is wasted on the young, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That's what I'm getting at here. Conscious childhood. But you're actually at the Alpha and the Omega. I call McLuhan King Lear on my chart. What's interesting, you know, he's ancient and he's obsolete. And he's got a problem. He's got three daughters who aren't getting along, which is actually, in a way, happened to him, literally, right? He's got three daughters.
Yep.
And actually, it was four daughters. But the point is that he was a king there, ancient, decrepit, ancient, old.
Yeah, grandfatherly.
He maintained the loop back to his childhood sensibility.
Yeah.
This is a good addendum because conscious mediumship you could each remember McLuhan used to talk about the four cycles. God's childhood, adolescence, maturity, and public life. It was either four or five. Do you remember that? In the mid-70s, he was writing about the five levels of rhetoric and the five stages and mapping it onto Finnegan's Wake. Do you remember that?
The four and the five into play, but I don't get the bit about the ages of man.
Oh, well, you remember him writing it?
No, I remember about the five canons of rhetoric and the five stage play and the four levels and the five, and but not about the actual as they pertain to the ages of.
No, it was okay. It begins with gods. And then adolescence, then maturity, then public life. So gods would be childhood, adolescence is youth, maturity is marriage and family, and then you enter the fourth phase of becoming a public symbolic tribal elder or something. Those four phases he included always. He never left any of them. They happened simultaneously. But he was at the end. He had a public life. He was an old King Lear, but he still was hanging out with the kids. Had that sensibility. You don't hear Malcolm Muggeridge or Henry Kissinger or John Wheeler, the famous physicist. Take any of these famous elders and any of their disciplines. You never heard them on CBC arguing with high school kids like McLuhan did.
Yeah.
It's endearing the way he would hang out, right?
Yeah, I concur.
And so this is conscious aphasal.
Well, Bucky had that same quality in the sense that he was transgenerational.
Yeah, but you know what? Bucky would not say we're doomed. I heard Marshall saying that occasionally. Marshall would engage all the emotions that I have on my chart. Yeah, he could be a paranoid, he could be a schizophrenic, he could be a panicky or hysterical and ecstatic. Bucky Fuller was always the ebullient optimist.
Didn't he always have utopia or oblivion? So he always entertained the possibility of doom.
Yes, but he thought that he didn't see that oblivion could be a healthy solution.
No, definitely not.
And I wouldn't be surprised if McLuhan was all for that sometimes. definitely McLuhan would say we're doomed and explore it. Bucky Fuller would blame it on other people. He wouldn't consider himself an agency of doom. McLuhan could see himself being an agency of doom because he puts that in the first chapter of the second section, spoken word, flower of evil. If anybody was a word guy in the 60s, it was him.
Yeah, and he's possibly more tuned into the complementarity of the, to create is to destroy and that sort of thing. So Bucky seems to have omitted the disservices of his invention from consideration.
Yes, but Marshall would still join his team, you know, on Wednesday. All four of the world game on Wednesday.
Show up. And you know, shut up, baby, and listen. You ever? No, you didn't. It was interesting watching when McLuhan would shut up. He never shut up in the seminars, you know, but he would occasionally. Two different instances I saw him shut up and not say a word, which was from our normal tone that we're used to, was odd. He did it when a major, a local Walter Cronkite, a major news anchor guy for the local news, Global Television, I forget his name, who actually apparently was a student of McLuhan's, he came and very quickly, Bob Logan started mouthing off the McLuhan line that this guy was just all content and had no understanding of the form. And McLuhan told him to shut up. He said, "We're not doing now. This is really great. What appropriate." He says, "We're not doing efficient. We're not doing former causality right now. We're doing efficient causality. we became what we beheld." And he shut up and let this guy go on for a long time. And the only other time he shut up, which may not be so strange, but you saw McLuhan, you know, you didn't have
the Mailer interview. He's pretty quiet in that.
Yes, and in the Muggeridge thing. But I'm talking about in the Monday night seminars. When Trudeau showed up in November 77, right after Camp David, I remember that. It was there. And McLuhan was real quiet. And that was good to see. There's lots of different ways to interpret that. Yeah, well, he would let the jest of honor go on for 5 minutes at most, and then start going on about acoustic space and visual space and formal causality. And Logan thought that's what we should do with Trudeau, or no, with the news guy, the news anchor. Nope, he got slapped down. You got that, Mr. Logan? You remember that?
No, sorry, I don't have that much memory slippage, Bob.
Like, no, I'm addressing Robert right now. I said, "Do you get that, Mr. Logan?" No, you're listening.
Yeah, eventually it'll make its way back to him.
So we came to another little wave completion.
Yeah, well, let's close that addendum.